Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We have a quorum, full house. A full house as far as quorum. Okay, but thanks for the clarification. Okay, we're going to, first of all, out of regard for our fire chief and his time, we will be moving item B to the first item. And then we will take item A last today. So, on item B, who's going to introduce the item? General Manager Gruber?
Madam President, board members, thank you. I'm just going to have Chief come up and where's Mark? Mark here?
He's here.
He came to PROS today and did a really good job and gave about an hour presentation on just kind of where we are with all this. The item on the agenda is after Mark is done talking about the proactive things that the fire department is doing and CAL FIRE, and I can bring you up to date on some things that we're doing. Then the agenda item is to execute applications and agreements with regulatory agencies to mitigate fire risk. Where this agenda item came from is, and Mark will touch on this, is there is a meeting tomorrow with the folks down at the county. And the purpose of that meeting is to evaluate and discuss the current permitting process as it relates to removal of dead and dying trees. There are currently, the goal of that meeting is to come to a consensus and implement a process that expedites the removal of those dead and dying trees. The county's position at this time, prior to tomorrow's meeting, is that a dead and dying tree does require a permit. CAL FIRE's position is that if it poses a fire hazard or a life and safety hazard, that it can be removed without a permit. So we're hopeful that the result of that meeting tomorrow will result in a mechanism that expedites that process, but is also consistent with Supervisor Gibson's desires regarding the drought task force and his efforts to wanting to expedite the removal of dead and dying trees for here. That will include possibly agreements and applications that essentially you'll be giving me the authority to do. That could be in the form of a blanket permit for not only our property, but possibly for private homeowners and their properties. And so we just want to be able to, this is part of the process that will help expedite the overall removal of the dead and dying trees in addition to some other things. I think Chief's probably going to pretty much cover everything, but if he leaves something out, I'll make sure that I pick up where he left off. So with that, I'd like to, if it's okay with Madam Chair, I'd like to turn it over to Chief. And this is a second presentation today, and I really appreciate you allowing him to go first. He's got a lot on his plate, and I want to be respectful of his time. And I said if you sat through the first one, he would probably be here for a couple hours or so, because it's going to probably take a while. So thank you.
Thank you, President Robinette and members of the board. I have developed a little bit of a cold, so if my voice starts cracking up or I start guzzling water, that's the reason for that. So I want to hopefully answer all your questions that you have. There are a lot of gray areas and a lot of things that are a departure from the way we've done business in the past due to the current conditions. Thank God we got a little bit of rain today. Hopefully a little bit of that soaks in and helps, but typically that only grows the flashy fuels a little better and doesn't really affect the fuel moistures of the trees that we're concerned with. So some of the questions that are out there are as Manager Gruber mentioned, are the permitting process for the removal of trees. Is it right that we would require trees to be removed and then turn around and have them go to the county to have to pay money to pull a permit to pull those out. There's various schools of thought on that. My feeling is that we will probably end up with a blanket permit to take out trees that are dead and dying. Okay, so that brings us to another question. How many trees are we going to take out? We have a situation in this forest that's taken 80 to 100 years to develop. We're not going to be able to come in here and run through this forest and remove every dead and dying tree in a year and solve the problem overnight. For a few different reasons. There are companies out there that could come in here and log this forest out and get it done probably in a month. I don't think that's what the community wants. I don't think that's what I want. We want to be thoughtful to the people who are having to pay to have these trees removed. The grant opportunities that we're pursuing are a little tricky when you're dealing with private property owners. Typically, you can find grant money that might be available on public lands. It's a little difficult to find grant money that will be assisting private property owners. Cal Fire and Cambria Fire have worked very closely together to try to come up with a logical approach to what we're doing. And currently what we're looking at is the ignition zone around a home is typically 30 feet out. Beyond that is a reduced fuel zone that takes it out to 100 feet. That's the defensible space standards that are drawn out in 4291, Public Resources Code. What the original plan, what we have in mind is a possible solution by any tree that's in that ignition zone, having that written up as a tree that would need to be removed, or if the tree is threatening some type of vital infrastructure or power lines or is in a position to be of some type of danger or at risk to starting a fire by getting in the power lines. That's what we're looking at. I think that that's a reasonable approach to the problem. I know that there are going to be folks out there that probably that's going to be a hardship for them as well. I would like to think that we can be flexible somewhat in our approach with maybe if there are extenuating circumstances, maybe removing ladder fuels and limbing trees up and doing what we can to eliminate hazards and move through this thing in a logical way that's not going to break the back of the community, but also at the same time will get us on the path to starting to provide the fire safety that we're looking for. Like I mentioned earlier, it's not something that occurred overnight, and I don't think we're going to be able to fix it overnight. But we do want to be providing the leadership to move down the road to where we are taking care of a problem that is becoming a glaring problem and seems to be getting worse by the day. So with that in mind, there are public agencies that are going to need to step to the plate to show leadership, those being the county, Caltrans, PG&E, CCSD, and county roads. There, you know, there's a lot of issues there that we're gonna need to come to an agreement that we're gonna have to get our shop in order and show that leadership and start the process. As far as preparing the community, We're looking at a three-prong approach to it. One is public education. You're all aware of the session that we're going to have here on Thursday night. We're going to have a public safety expo here that's we're going to interact with all the community members that are here to familiarize them with our evac plan, home hardening, defensible space issues. We're going to have a campaign to try to get everybody signed up for the reverse 911 on their cell phones and the NICSL services to where we've got early notification. That is a challenge for us. We are not a part of the Diablo civil defense siren system, and that has always been a challenge for us. So that's a start in that direction. It may not be the panacea, but it is a start in that direction. Fuel reduction, as I mentioned, is the second approach to that. We want to make sure we do it thoughtfully and that we're not putting a burden, unbearable burden on our community, but we're showing the leadership and getting that underway to where we can move forward. And the third part of that is our continual pursuit of grant money to possibly assist private property owners and the public agencies that are doing the clearing. We are still alive for two grants for the cogen. The other two grants for just the clearing part of it, we were denied. We won't have those funds, but the cogen thing is still out there, and if it came down to it and we weren't able to put the cogen plant, I understand that the closest cogen plant to here is about 130 miles away, and that it would be a possibility that we could truck some of the down fuel out of here and take it to that site. There is a thought out there that there's not enough biomass here to warrant the continued use or even a three-year cogen facility here. So I've heard that mentioned. That's not something that's a documented thing, but I have heard that comment. With that being said, I would open it up to questions that you may have regarding where we're at that I haven't covered.
Thank you. Do we have at this time from the board? Yes, Mr.
Sure.
Barringer?
Chief, I know that you're thinking of a grant for a cogen plant, but maybe we should buy one. I mean, does it make sense, or are they just tremendously expensive? You know, I mean, just because we don't get free money, maybe we should consider.
I personally have not priced them. I would guess that a solar option, a photovoltaic option, would probably be a cheaper option,
okay,
and would be viable farther into the future than a cogen. The idea behind the cogen facility is that there would not be enough biomass here to continually use it, and that at some point the end might justify the means, and there would be the fear that maybe a lot of the timber might be harvested out to run the cogen facility for the sake of generating power on healthy forest and maybe taking it a little bit too far.
Okay. I also noticed that your defensible space brochure here has the 3 feet around a house should be in
30.
Fact,
30.
30.
Yeah, there's a 3 foot area, though, where you want to keep it green, actually, no combustibles.
Yes.
And would it be helpful if we had some outdoor watering to enable people to keep some of their plants green?
I'm glad you asked that question. I think that's a big deal for fire safety, the idea that you can't water your ornamentals. I don't believe it would make a big difference now with a lot of the Monterey pine that have died. I don't believe that watering those now would be able to increase the fuel moisture. But most certainly for the ornamentals and stuff that people plant around their house, I think it would make a huge difference.
Right.
I mean, it's a big deal for us because that dry, flashy fuel right up next to your house, right. You know, you've seen, we've brought videos in here before and showed how just a mop bucket or some common combustibles on a deck can make the difference on whether a house, you know, because the fire front moves through and then it's all the embers and different things that start catching on fire after the fire front's down the road a ways that typically burn the homes down. And then when the homes catch on fire, the BTU production and ember production from the homes burning far outpaces the forest combustion. Yeah. So, yes, I think, in my personal opinion, from a firefighter's point of view, I would love to see the lawns irrigated and the vegetation up next to the homes irrigated.
One would surmise also that if you had a garden that if it was a live tree and the water does go down in the ground and doesn't in fact affect roots of trees. So after not watering for a couple of years, maybe we can try and, you know, it's not going to revive a dead tree, but if there's a healthy one, it'll keep it from suffering next year too. So
yeah,
it's just a thought.
That's a good question, and it definitely is something that I think has contributed to a little bit of our unease with the current situation is the dry, you know, the lack of watering right next to the homes.
Right.
So,
other questions? Yes, Director
Chief
Thompson.
You mentioned this morning at the PROS meeting what some of the activities of the CCs were going to be during this period. And how they were going to be available to assist. Could you elaborate on that?
The C's have been working for the last couple of days up on the Covell break and maintaining the Covell break, and they will be available to us. Even though we did not land the grants that we had hoped to, there were the Fire Safe Council has recognized the issues here and have committed to directing the C's through SRA funding to do work in Cambria. And we plan to do a series of chipping events, and we also have them available to do projects on public lands. And I think that the Fiscalini Ranch area around the homes, you know, in particular up around the Trenton entrance and that area where it interfaces with the homes over on Lodge Hill, are targeted, and we will have the use of the C's to a fair degree here to do the work. But that won't be on private property. That'll all be on public lands. And I also want to recognize Carlos for his efforts, because he's taken some strides in a leadership role already to move toward that end, and has done a lot of clearing and stuff already. You know, he's out in front of the game, and that's what we need is the leadership from the government organizations to kind of set the example for the community in this situation. Did that answer your question? Okay.
Director Rice is next.
I just want to make sure that I'm... Right now, we're giving him the input on... Because he's going to be meeting with the county on this tomorrow. I just wanted to point out that the forest management plan is mentioned not just in the North Coast Area Plan, but also in the safety element of the county general plan.
Okay.
Which it backs up the county actually supporting forming a district or doing something to implement a forest management plan. It also says in the North Coast Area Plan about forest management that funds for that are collected for removal of Monterey pines should go into a mitigation fund that would help fund a forest management plan, and it, in that same area, which is, I'm going to see if what find out what page it is here. I can send it to you so you'll have it, but this is in the north of the approved North Coast Area Plan. It does say specifically that no mitigation fee would be required for removal of dead or diseased trees or trees in dangerous condition as determined by the county or its representative. Now, that's separate from the permitting, and that's them implementing a mitigation fee. So you just may, that might be some way to, the county, I mean, in all of the county documents, it does say that the county should be, at the very least, helping support CCSD in developing a plan to fund a forest mitigation, a forest management plan, or doing it themselves, and that was suggested by the Coastal Commission. So,
well, that's a point well taken. I'll definitely lobby for that. The idea that that there would be permit fees to remove dead trees, I think, is overwhelmingly discouraged by the majority of the group that we're meeting with tomorrow, although there is the other side of the argument that will be represented at that meeting. And I would anticipate that since precedent has been set in Santa Cruz for a similar program where they blanket covered all of the permitting to remove trees that were dead or dying, I would think that at least we'll be able to get over that hurdle. But I heard what you're saying about the county pitching in and being available to assist with the mitigation and removal of some of the problems. And what we have now in play that we didn't at the time of the forest management plan is the SRA fee. Mm-hmm. And that is a huge thing because all of Cambria is in SRA, mm-hmm. and everybody pays that fee, and that needs to come back around, especially in the scenario that we have now. We need to utilize some of the funds that the folks are paying here to safeguard their homes and utilize that.
Thank you, and President Robinette, the other thing that I would like to make sure that is brought up, at least with the county, is making sure that dead and dying trees, dead trees are fairly obvious, dying trees not as much, and looking to the long term, we definitely need to do something for the short-term fire danger with the dead and dying trees that are a threat. I want to make sure that we're also keeping an eye to the long-term and general forest health in the long run. We don't want people taking out trees willy-nilly because it looks like it might be dying. Does the county have a plan? Does anybody have a plan for how do we determine which trees are trees that need to be as opposed to trees that are just might be dying?
I think that's a value that's held widely. Not just within the CCSD organization and the community here. I think that CAL FIRE's foresters are very sensitive to that. I had a conversation yesterday with Alan Peters, and we discussed that very issue of being able to recognize trees and to not willy-nilly come in and remove trees that are viable. I feel very confident that just due to the program that we're trying to put through, to where we're looking at trees that are hazard trees, due to the financial burden and the scope of the problem that we have, that we will be identifying trees that are dead or that are down on the ground that are creating a fire hazard. That's where we'll start. The problem is too big for us to get into that, and hopefully by that time we'll have our arms around a plan to where we have some type of forest management, to where we're moving forward with a program that's thoughtful, and we're able to identify trees that that are dying, and not just removing trees to be removing trees. I don't think that's the intent of the fire department, CAL FIRE, or CCSD fire.
Thank you. I appreciate that approach.
Could I? Thank you. And I'll get to you also, Vice President Clift. But do you want to elaborate a little bit? We did have kind of a coordination meeting the other day with CAL FIRE, with you, with the sheriff, and really looking at this and, again, trying to proact, to be prepared, to have the community be informed, to be prepared. When you're speaking now, you are speaking primarily on the undeveloped lots. And did you want to just go ahead and give a bit of an update? When you're discussing trees that really aren't dying and don't need to come down, my understanding was that CAL FIRE will be advising in terms of residential, and that would be one good way we'll protect that, and that people wouldn't be advised to be taking down something that CAL FIRE and their forester doesn't feel ought to be coming down.
We met with, I met with Alan Peters yesterday and the inspectors that they're bringing in, and we will be training them. Part of their mission is going to be not only the inspection of the home, but it's going to be the public outreach. They're going to have packets and bags of information for defensible space practices, evacuation planning, preparation, that type of thing, that they will try to interact with each homeowner when they knock on the door to do the inspection. The inspections will not be heavy-handed in any way, and they are instructed to identify trees that are a threat to the home to start with. They're not going to just be going out and looking at trees that are nowhere near a structure, that are dead, and identifying those and trying to take out. Their mission will be totally set to deal with that ignition zone, that 30-foot ignition zone around the home. On the other hand, the CCSD fire, as you know, we have jurisdiction over the vacant parcels.
Exactly.
And our philosophy has always been that we are concerned about properties that have dead and dying trees that are within that defensible space zone of structures. We also are not willy-nilly wanting to just take out trees just because we can, because they're there on property or because they're not looking healthy, but only if they are a threat to a home. That will be modified a little bit because we had dead and dying trees that were 12 inches or smaller had to come out. We're probably going to go to 18 inches or smaller or larger can stay as long as they're on the ground and they're not within that ignition zone or within an area that would become a problem for firefighting tactics. Also, on the same hand, unless a tree is a threat within that ignition zone or a threat to a structure, a power line, or some type of facility, we will not probably identify those as being something that will have to be pulled out either. And a lot of that is due not because we don't think it would enhance forest health to do it. Monetarily, the fallout from that is something that is it overwhelms a small agency. As I don't know if you recall the defensible space ordinance that we tried to roll out. I think it's been 6 or 7 years ago. We don't want to get into. We would prefer to collaborate with the environmental groups within the community to enhance forest health and keep an eye on fire safety and move in a direction where we're all on the same page. I think that's what we're trying to do. I have a meeting with the Forest Committee to go over. We have to draft the document, the notice that goes out for our weed abatement. That has to be done prior to this month's meeting, and it has to be reviewed by legal. So we have to have that done fairly soon. I have the meeting tomorrow to go through that and to try to get all of that hammered out. And I want to meet with the Cambria Forest Committee to go through and see if they have anything that they would like to add to it, or if they have problems with that or comments to make sure that we're still in lockstep. I want to make sure that we're all in this together. We're trying to improve forest health, and by way of that, improve fire safety as well. But there are issues that immediately have to be dealt with because of how fast this situation has come on, because of the drought and the beetle kill and all of that that followed it.
Okay, Vice President Cliff?
Yes, a couple of things. The governor's drought order of, it's April 25th of 2014, has several references to it on homeowners being exempt from a lot of rules and regulations in order to get the dying trees out. And I think that might be something that's helpful at your meeting, in that there's recognition at the governor's level about the need to get this done, or to make it available for the homeowner to get it done.
Okay.
Secondly, what I'm hearing here is you're developing a priority of trees to be removed. First priority being within 30 feet of dead trees within 30 feet of a structure or a power line. One of the other things I'm really concerned about is evacuation.
Yeah, ingress and egress on the roadways, correct.
And a dead tree down over certain Burton Artif on the lower side could create an evacuation problem, and we could create a hazard to getting to some of your evacuation areas.
Correct.
I'm not worried about Marine Terrace evacuating and having a tree in Artif. I'm worried about the hill area.
You're worried about running up Hillcrest into Pine Knolls or the area along Sunbury.
So it seems to me it's very important to get county roads involved here, because I can see an argument that could come about where a property owner, our roads are relatively narrow, but the actual road easement, which the county owns, is large, and I'm sure that a lot of those trees that are that might be tagged as dead and dying by Cal Fire might be tagging trees that are on county property, and so I think we need to get county roads involved very, very much, because even if we get a lot of these trees down, if we have that fire, evacuation's got to be the primary concern of this community to get the people out safely and having these roads available. The third question is the one that Director Beringer brought up regarding maintaining as much green space close to homes. And our position has been no irrigation watering. The governor's position is 2 days a week. Many of the counties are taking 2 days a week.
And, of course, the fire department would love for you to just keep it green and water it every day if you could.
I know. There's
got to be a balance.
I'm wondering if there's a balance here somewhere that we have done one thing, and my concern is that by doing the conservation to the extent that we have done it, are we creating a secondary problem? And I guess we just need a lot more professional advice on that.
I could give you my opinion, and it would go something like this. A water emergency, if we run low on water, I believe that people could leave the area, we could truck water in. I believe it's a very serious situation, but I don't think it's as life-threatening as the fire danger that results. The fire danger is kind of less obvious. Mm-hmm. You don't think about it as something that might happen to you, but it's not something that you're going to be able to recover from. You're not going to be, you know, if we get a wildland fire, it's going to be an event that takes place over a few hours, and my worst nightmare is that there's going to be people trapped, and we would have loss of life, loss of property. It's not something that you would be able to rebound from nearly as easily as you would a water shortage. I think it's in my opinion, and of course I'm a fire chief, mm-hmm. I think that the fire danger is a much greater concern than the water issue. But they all tie together.
Yeah.
They, you know, I mean, we can't fight fire without water and that type of thing. But I appreciate your comments on it because it's something that we think about. You know, it definitely affects us. It's not as overt, but it is definitely something that would happen much quicker, and it would have severe consequences attached to it that you wouldn't be able to work your way out of as easily as a water shortage, in my opinion.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. I just had a couple of other questions, too. And one was, we mentioned chipping sometimes. We've gone through quite a bit of that. In our declared emergency for fire that we're in now, and we talked about where to take all the dead and dying stuff that's maybe chipped or maybe some of it can just be put in, hauled away in trucks. Given the fact that we could have a fire, would chipping actually add to the problem? Does it dry out? Does it become fuel?
The fuel, it definitely creates a fuel, but the fire potential from chipped material is much less dangerous. It creates a smoldering type of fire that doesn't have that that flashy aspect to it that would jump into a crown fire. And we're much less concerned with that. And we've always felt that chip material blown back onto the property is something that we can deal with. If we have a smoldering fire, we're definitely not as concerned with that as we are with something that's in the trees, either in the ladder fuel, in the understory, or, you know, heaven forbid, up in the crown of the forest. So I think that chipping is a viable option still, even though we do have, and there's another benefit to the chipped material, and that's that it returns some of the nutrients back into the soil that would be removed if you took them out. And I know that that's a concern. I think that that creates a fertile environment for seedlings to regenerate down the road as the chips degrade and it creates that healthy soil for that reproduction of seedlings.
Okay. Thank you. It seems to me that what we're here discussing, of course, and what your overview has been really, really helpful. I think that you and CAL FIRE and the other agencies are taking this very seriously and yet wanting the balance, and I think we all appreciate that. It's nothing that anyone wants to do that one solution harms something else. We want to try to find that balance, keep our community safe with the residential, with the undeveloped lots. Just so that people know, when we met the other day, what I would like to ask for on the agenda each month now, because this is a very ongoing, serious situation, I'm asking that you and a representative from CAL FIRE, and during the time that we have the sheriff here also, do talk to us about how we're making progress. What are our timelines? How are we progressing toward those timelines? What are the things you're noticing that seem to be going along pretty smoothly? Where do you still need help from the community to support what we're doing? So we want this to become a standard item for a while.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, because I think that puts us in this all together, as opposed to us doing our thing and then trying to, you know, I appreciate that.
We are in it together, and hopefully you will have that same success with county, because county roads, public works, waiving certain requirements with permits are really going to be important to us, too, that they don't become barriers. We want them to be our partners and collaborative. Thank you, Monique. I was going to ask then, if we don't have further comment here right now, did we have any public comment before we consider a motion? Monique, excuse me. Is this both on this item now? This is on the item that we're talking about, item B. Do we have that?
No, on B.
I know we are. So both of these relate to that?
No, one is number two.
Okay. Someone does want to speak on 3B, though, so I'd like to have a public comment at this time.
If I could make just one more quick comment, I want to make sure that the community knows that the LE100 inspections that are on the improved parcels that will be done by CAL FIRE will begin this month, probably within the next couple of weeks. You'll probably see a combined effort between the two agencies working together on both sides of it, but that part will begin very much immediate. That will be within the next couple of weeks. Due to the legal constraints and the way that we have to roll out our weed abatement program on the vacant parcels, that has to go through a process that puts us to where our deadline for clearing will be July 1. We will try to get this thing noticed, get the public nuisance declared at this April meeting, and try to get the notices out, and then put the deadline for clearing on the vacant parcels at July 1. So that's going to run a little bit behind, but there's not a lot of way around doing it that way unless we were to step up a lot of at a lot of different special board meetings and able to do it. So just by nature of the way the program rolls out, those two things, you'll see both departments working together as we always do, but you're going to see a variation in time frame between the two.
That's great.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we appreciate that. Okay, thank you very much.
Uh-huh. President Robinette, I have a confusion on item B, which is what we're talking about right now, about what it is actually authorizing the general manager to do, because while I completely appreciate the full discussion we've had on the fire,
exactly,
I don't know, there's no resolution about what specifically we would be authorizing the general manager to undertake under the fire risk. And I want him to be able to do that, but if somebody could speak to that and help me.
It would seem to me that as they go to the concepts of maybe a one general permit, all these kinds of things, that the general manager would act on our behalf to take care of all that, to expedite it, not have to bring it back to the board. I'm not sure what item would be necessary, but as we move forward in this, I'm just knowing government – they're going to want something signed somewhere and someone doing those kinds of things. So I think the purpose of this is really to give some kind of a blanket authority to the general manager to clear the way without having to come back to this board.
And doesn't really include like contracts to do things so as much as making agreements with the other agencies to get things. There's no resolution, so I'm just trying to make sure that I understand what this is asking of the board to approve. Because, you know, I want to give the general manager the authority to do what needs to be done.
I think we're given an authority to deal with other agencies, not necessarily to contract private contractors or things like that, but in things with other agencies that need our agreement or our willingness to participate, authorizing him to do that. That was the intent and purpose of putting it on there.
And yes, that's my understanding, that this would simply give him more streamlined process with applications relating to the fire situation and agreements, and it would also be then that he would also try to get this tree permitting process that the county requires somewhat waived, so that that's not a barrier to our community to getting critical things removed. And thank you for asking for that clarification. We have some public comment that has come forward. And we have first, we're on 3B. We've moved that ahead. So we have Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you very much, Madam President. I'm Elizabeth Bettenhausen from Cambria. And just a quick comment initially, I've been meditating on what the possible meaning is of the phrase "a dead and dying tree." So I don't expect any answer on that, but I'm very bemused by that possibility biologically. The second thing I'd like to note is that I would very much appreciate it, Madam Chair, if you were to ask the staff for a monthly update on their monitoring of the plant conditions in this town, especially the forest. Now that we have an emergency, divined as we always do it somewhat specifically to our own interests here. Now that we have an emergency, we get all these reports and you ask for monthly reports. But my question is, when do we help the community? All of us, but you especially. When do you help the community understand what this ecological system is and its needs for the preservation of its natural state? And I've heard nothing about that from the board in all my years here, which have about managed to 13. So I'd like very much to have a conservation meditation by this board, not today, but in the very near future, on how you construe your obligation for conservation in terms of the biological conditions of this town. I'd like to ask, this inspection that's coming up in a couple of weeks, will that be of every house and every structure? If not, how will it be judged? Which houses will come first? And how will you let people know in the next 2 weeks that this is going to be happening? And I am very thankful that Director Rice has asked the question about the no resolution. I haven't the vaguest idea what your motion is going to be. And now that I've used up my public comment time, I won't be able to make a public comment on it after you make the motion and maybe even have it seconded. So once again, friends, if you would use a parliamentary procedure that is to the advantage also of the public, I would be one very grateful citizen. And finally, I'm glad that there's no fiscal authority in whatever motion you intend to make, because then you would have in a few months probably to have to rescind that economic fiscal authority like you had to do, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you very much, Madam President.
Thank you. Jim Webb.
Hi, good afternoon. Jim Webb, Cambria resident. I wanted to just make a few comments, which I hope are helpful. They're meant in that spirit. I'm a property owner up in the Central Sierra where we face enhanced fire conditions, just as we do here. And we learned a couple of things that I just thought I'd pass on. One is the area up in the upper Tule watershed was logged heavily just before World War II, and most of it was clear cut. And at that time, that was the standard practice, and they walked away, and the forest regenerated and came up. But it all came up at the same time, and it all came up at the same height. And now we have a very mature forest, all heavily crowned, and many of the trees are dying because of drought. Many are diseased because they're mature trees. And it's not a very healthy forest. And in part, it's not very healthy because of prior logging practices. Now, there is a forest that I fish in and have for 30 years up out of Lake Almanor, California, near Chester. That's up by Mount Lassen. It's owned by Collins Pine, and it's one of the few actively logged forests that has been certified as a sustainable forest. I would encourage you, for whatever it's worth, just go take a look at their website, read a little bit about their forestry practices, and see if you see any parallels there to the situation we face here. It's Collins Pine, and they have foresters on staff that can be consulted, could be hired, and could be talked to. And I hope you take advantage of it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mary Webb?
Yeah, I appreciated the Fire Safe Council meeting. I would recommend for the meeting on Thursday night that there be provided a comment sheet so that people can write their questions and maybe have them answered publicly, because it helps other people to understand what's going on. And to have written materials would really be helpful. I am also concerned about evacuation plans as well as the trees and the forest, of course. But, you know, it's really interesting. The trees can't. And, you know, the trees can't defend themselves. So there's no one, you know, there's no tree up here saying, yeah, don't cut down all the trees. But the commercial interests in this town can defend themselves. And that's why things happen, like road closures happen for commercial events, and that's not ever considered a fire hazard. So April 18th, we have a car show coming up, and you're going to close off Cambria Drive from Main Street to Highway 1. Well, I live on Pine Knolls. That's one of my evacuation routes. But, you know, it's like there's not anybody up here screaming about don't close the road there. It's going to be, no, let's go ahead, close that road, because, of course, that's a tourism-oriented event, and we're going to have hundreds of people enjoying that, and cars are going to be sitting there, and that's always fine. So I'd like to, let's make sure we don't close the roads April 18th, because we could have a fire, and make sure we don't close a Main Street for Pine Dorado this year, because, of course, we could have a fire. To use desalinated water to water plants around our yards is absolutely ridiculous. That is like the worst possible solution we could be coming up with right now. If somebody has dead plants around their house, they need to take the plants out and chip. Put chips and mulch around your house. Don't lift the water moratorium under this guise of an emergency to, you know, make sure that you have green plants around your house. The resolution that you have is not clear, and I absolutely think you should vote no to give the general manager full authority to authorize him to execute applications and agreements with regulatory agencies to mitigate fire risk. Well, I don't understand why this can't come before you, and I think it needs to come before you so that it comes before the community so we could know what applications and agreements are being executed before they're executed. I wish there were written materials today. We need a forest ecologist. The forest management plan was approved by the Cambria CSD board in 2003 and never implemented. It's mentioned I don't know how many times in the North Coast Area Plan and Title 23, and it's never been implemented. It's never been funded. Once we start have chainsaws and people dangling from trees, cutting trees down, people are going to start acting on their own. Whether they have a dead tree or a dying tree or a healthy tree, people that have been wanting to have their ocean view for years and years are just going to start cutting trees down. We're going to have to do something to make sure that that does not happen, because if the trees all come down, it's basically just going to be hotter and drier here. Climate change is here to stay. The number one fire emergency we have in this town right now is lack of water storage. Thank you.
Thank you.
President Robinette?
Yes, Director Thompson?
Just one point of clarification. Cambria Drive has never been closed for a car show that the Chamber has put on during the Chili Cook-Off, and it will not be closed this year either.
Thank you. And actually, since I've been involved in that car show, too, it isn't then. It is the Pine Dorado, though. The car show at the Pine Dorado goes clear into that street. I would agree with that, Mary. Okay.
Are you going to entertain a motion, perhaps?
I am going to entertain a motion. We are ready.
I would move that we authorize the general manager to execute applications and agreements with regulatory agents to mitigate fire risk and report on any agreements or regulatory agencies that he makes to the board, but he can execute them in the meantime, and none of them can involve a fiscal expenditure. That would be my motion.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve this. We approve this request. So, any further discussion on it?
I have a couple of questions, and I guess just kind of let you know where I'm coming from. So my understanding is that if the resolution isn't approved, and the general manager needed to have board approval for some kind of agreement, that the president would have to call a special meeting, and we would review any agreement that was going to be entered into and approve it. I would assume that that would be the process, and maybe I'm not right on that. Is that true? If this particular motion were not approved, the general manager would essentially, if he needed it done right away, we would have to have a special meeting.
I think that would depend on the nature of the agreement and our application, but generally that would be a true statement.
Okay. What does it cost us in time and money if we follow the standard policies and procedures that we normally would? I mean, what is the effect? What effect are we getting here as a benefit? What do we gain by approving it? I mean, that's kind of where I'm coming from.
I think this is an attempt to expedite that process so that it does not need to come back to the board. Staff reports and the time associated with their preparation would not be necessary. And again, this doesn't authorize the general manager to violate any of the policies or procedures that are currently in place with regard to expenditures, purchasing policies, contracting policies. It simply authorizes him to enter into agreements that don't involve the expenditure of money and applications for grants and related interests.
Doesn't he already kind of have that authority?
No.
Okay. That's good clarification for me to know. I appreciate Director Beringer, you adding on at the end of the motion the extra statements that you made, and I want to make sure that they're part of the record, as that it's not just the exact wording that's on the agenda. I'm sure Monique is on top of that. Yes.
I'm not sure that the motion requires an immediate meeting. I would perceive it be at the next regular
meeting. Right. Yes, just report on anything he's done at the next regular
meeting. At the next regular board meeting, for sure.
Right. Okay, oh, for sure. I wanted to make sure that you weren't asking that if he makes an agreement, we have to call a special meeting that week.
No, that would defeat the whole purpose of approving this motion.
That's right.
I appreciate that's, yes.
Okay, any further discussion? Because there was a little modification and clarity to the motion, Director Barinder, would you read your motion back?
It was to authorize the general manager to execute applications and agreements with regulatory agencies to mitigate fire risk and report at the next general meeting activity, therefore, and none can have a fiscal impact.
Okay. Thank you. We're ready then. Let's have a roll call vote.
Director Beringer?
Aye.
Vice President Clift?
Yes.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Thompson?
Aye.
President Robinette?
Aye. Okay, motion carries 5-0. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chief, for your information. We're going to now...
Before we move on, I just want to announce the Forest Committee meeting tomorrow.
All right. Go ahead.
Is that all right?
Sure.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, I think it's an important
The Forest Committee is meeting tomorrow night, April 8th, at the Rabobank at 6:30 p.m. It is open to the public, and anybody who would like to attend and get more information and hear what's going on with the Forest Committee should do so. That's tomorrow, April 8th, 6:30 at Rabobank.
Thank you for that announcement. Very timely. Okay, we're moving now on to 3A. And so, General Manager, would you please introduce 3A, item 3A?
Thank you, Madam President and board members. Item 3A is discuss and consider continuing operation of the emergency water supply plant and implementation of the emergency water supply surcharges effective Wednesday, April 8th, 2015. This was an item that was requested at the last couple board meetings by Director Beringer. Specifically, at the last board meeting, he asked for the board to consider and deliberate a criteria, if you will, for deciding when we should and when we shouldn't, which I think is a good idea to run the EWS. I sent you some information, just some emails the last couple days on some cost associated with it. We have Bob's here, and I also have Patrick in case there's any questions relating to that. And I've asked Justin to come, and yay, Justin, our A-team. And because I really think it's important for policymakers to hear things from an operational perspective. And just kind of give you a brief history of where all this came from. You know, we hired CDM Smith to provide a three-month contract for us to run the EWS. That contract will be up April 10th. CDM has indicated to me that they will be willing to run it through the end of the month for us with no additional charge. Whatever the board decides today, there's cost associated with that. I know that we were hopeful that after a three-month period of time that our staff would feel comfortable operating it, fully operating it. I don't think anybody really understood early on in this process. If any of you have read through the OMMP, I know Director Rice has asked for a copy, and it's some really good late-night reading, let me tell you. Title 22 and Title 27 permits, the amount of sampling and the reports required is astronomical. It's overwhelming, frankly. And so after 6 months of period of time, we'll definitely go back to Regional Water Quality Control Board and take that data that we have and ask them to lessen the sampling and reporting requirements. And they've indicated that they'll do that, but they need that baseline data first. And then there's been a lot of conversation, and I've provided you some information about, you know, what the shutdown entails and how complicated that is and how often do... if we shut it down for a relatively short period of time, do we have to coat the filters? You know, do we have to gel them? If we were to leave it off for an extended period of time, you know, what does that entail from an operational standpoint? What does it entail to turn it back on? How difficult is that? One of the things in the emails that I sent you is, and one of the things that I think Justin has a really good understanding of is, the instrumentation, and there's a series of probes and meters and things like that need to be preserved, and so we're here today to discuss, I guess, whether we want to run it to the end of the month and then shut it off for a period of time, or if we want to keep running it, and so we have an administrative view on it, we have an engineering view on it, we have a legal view on it. We have a financial view on it, and we have an operational view. And I think our job here, out of those five views, is to help you collectively come to a decision. I didn't want to make a recommendation, or I didn't want to taint your ability to come to a decision collectively as a governing body. But Bob and I and Justin met last night and talked for a while, and And from an operational perspective, I think Justin brings up some really good points why it might make sense to turn it off for a couple months. But I would ask that, you know, that you ask us some questions, but we want to just be able to provide you as much information as possible and kind of weigh the pros and cons of you know, the advantages and disadvantages of doing both and come to a consensus today. You know, we thought the easy part was when the project was built, and I'll be honest with everybody, you know, it's built, it's done, now we're operating it, and really it's been challenging the last 3 months for staff, it really has, but it's been a good experience. We've been able to address some things that need to be resolved, and we have a reliable water source for the community. Just one more thing is, as part of your decision-making process, we have a tracer study that needs to be done. That was part of the requirements. Again, a second tracer study during the summer. So from an operational perspective, I want Justin to be able to maybe share your thoughts. And I want Bob to chime in, too. He thinks he's supposed to be on vacation this week. His kids are on spring break, so I think he's actually glad he's here. But but so I want Bob to chime in too, and I apologize for not putting a agenda packet together and a staff report, and I want to thank Director Berenger too for really, you know, having a strong desire to have this meeting and have this discussion. So it wasn't just a decision by the general manager or staff to make a major policy decision really for the community. So.
Okay. Thank you. All right, at this time, where do we want to go with this? Do we want to hear from other people? Because as you said in your opening comments, that, you know, it would be wise to hear from, certainly from our water department budget, certainly from our engineer, as we're trying to decide on. Because the question really before us, as I understand it, is how much longer do we want to leave it on for the moment? Right. Do you want to speak to that?
Sure. First of all, I'd like to thank the president for getting this special meeting, because we never had an opportunity as a group to really talk about when we're going to run it and when we're not. And I'm sure most of us have had conversations with Mr. Gruber, and we got a very nice budget that I had a chance to look at that talked about the operating costs, which are not insignificant, by the way. And I have had a preference up until an hour ago to keep it, hour and a half ago, to keep it running on a small level to avoid the cost of starting and stopping it. It's pretty clear, though, that the regulatory requirements would force us to continue to do all the measurements. And in doing so, that's a difficult thing. And a costly thing. I think that operationally we should be able to, we need to learn how to turn it off, and we need to learn how to turn it back on. So I'm now in a strong supporter of turning it off after we learn how to turn it off. So I would like CDM Smith to continue to operate the plant so that we can have a hands-on experience of turning it off. And I think we should plan on a date certain, part of our discussion, as to when to turn it back on, so that we do go through the process of a couple of months during the summer for the tracer study, especially, to perfect all of the things we've done, as you know, through the permit that we have. Santa Barbara's starting theirs, and I think it would be wise for us to have a regular schedule, so to speak, until we know that we're out of the water. So with that, you know, finances I've seen, and I know that people have talked, I'd be sure, you know, if you think that it's important to have each member of the staff talk to their particular problem, that might help. And also public comment would be good to make sure that we have the concerns of other people. So that's just an outline.
All right, I was going to say on public comment, we don't have any yet.
Even better.
Yeah. Okay, so then what's the pleasure of the board? Do you want to just hear some recommendations from each of the staff members?
I have a
Director Rice?
I have a clarification question so I know what we're actually deciding today. We're talking about essentially for this year, water year, calendar year, fiscal year, whatever, but not necessarily the larger policy on when we decide to turn it on and off in general after this current drought emergency. That's correct. Am I making the correct assumption? We're talking about not an overall long-term, because we still have to get the regular CDP to go down that road.
It's my understanding on this, yes, that we are dealing in
it's
the moment.
This short term.
Okay. Yes, we are, because we do want to have, in fact, it probably makes sense later to have an ad hoc to at least bring us some recommendations on, standard kinds of things of when it should go off and on. So since this is our first time and in the experience of, well, for now, what do we do? This would be short term.
Thank you.
So, so would you like to hear from the other staff members?
I think it would be appropriate to hear from staff because public comment might want to comment on what staff says.
Yes, I would go with the full presentation first, then public comment, then we'll look for a motion.
Okay, and then maybe, I don't know, if I could, Tim, do you have anything to add that you want to add from a legal perspective or from a permitting process perspective or anything maybe from your point of view? Or
Just to say, we're operating under an emergency coastal development permit that allows operation during a stage 3 water shortage declaration. We're still under the declaration, so there's no legal impediments to continuing to operate at this point.
Bob, is there, from an engineering standpoint, and one of the things that we're in the process of evaluating right now, and it does tie into this agenda item, is Task Order 6, and we're hoping to bring that back to the board in April or May, that some additional cost to the district associated with this project. But we want to really sharpen our pencils on that and making sure that CDM is honoring all their commitments by the previous task orders, and then also that we're not that we're just bringing everything back to you now for deliberation and consideration, and you that the board and the public has a really good understanding of costs associated with the project. So, Bob, is there anything that you want to add, and maybe advantages, disadvantages, or kind of from an engineering perspective, what you might see them in? We could go to Patrick and then Justin.
Sure, I think my recommendation would be to shut it off after Justin and the operators have the training on two aspects. One is the clean in place, which has not been done yet on the facility, where you actually clean the membranes doing a certain methodical procedure, and that's to happen next week. And also going through, as Director Berenger mentioned earlier, I think it's good to know how to shut the system fully down and how to bring it back up. So if you shut it down, say, towards the end of this month, and then bring it back online around mid-July, when you're more likely to need it, when the levels historically drop in our well field, I think that would make sense to me. If you coordinate the restart of it, say, mid-July to early August, somewhere in that time frame, and then you at the same time do the remaining tracer study that the Division of Drinking Water wants us to complete. That seems to make the most sense to me from my standpoint. And there's a couple of refinements we want to do in the meantime to the project, but that wouldn't keep it from operating right now. So.
Okay. Just a clarification on that then, Bob. The thing that you had mentioned about we do need to have the tracer study, that is okay if the recommendation was first, go till the end of April now with continuing training, and then to come back and turn it back on in mid-July for 2 months, that would be okay with the regulatory agency that wants us to do the tracer study to wait till July?
Yeah, I believe so. I don't know if I have anything that specific in writing from them, but from discussions, I understand that to be the case, and the tracer study is a 60-day minimum duration test, and you can always continue in production. We will be producing water during that tracer study.
Okay.
So it's actually going to be reinjected back into the well field, so you can extend beyond that 60 days if it's needed at that time.
All right, thank you. Another question for Bob.
Yes, one of the items, Madam President, that you suggested previously was the whole notion of videotaping the process.
And I have that down here.
Because obviously it's good for Justin to know how to turn it off, but I think it's good for anyone in the future to know how to turn it off and turn it on. And
I will speak to that then. I have been very much interested in having this happen. I think now is the perfect time, and I've actually talked to Justin about it too, and he feels it would be very helpful. And that is that if we are, and it's nice to know, by the way, that CDM Smith would let us run it till the end of April with no additional charge. That is huge, given how much it actually could cost. But one of the outcomes and one of the things I feel very much will be an advantage for us is as you go through the real life step by step, hands on yourself, mentoring and coaching by CDM Smith, questions you have, all of those things, that we also do videotape that so that you and at least another person on your team really feel comfortable because you can do things and then 2 or 3 months go by, and certainly we have this little modest manual that you've been left with. what is it, 200 pages, I think?
315.
315, thank you very much. So I thought, really, a real-life, hands-on, interactive video with you talking with the folks that will be mentoring and coaching you, and let you do the hands-on turn-off. Let them be your mentors. And then get it on video would be much easier and quicker for you to go back to another time when you need to turn it down, turn it off. And then coming back in mid-July seems perfect to go right ahead with that same process and this time let you have the hands-on experience and get feedback from them on turning it on. So they would need to come back at that point and help. Do you have something on that, General Manager?
I just absolutely agree with that. And as we go into Patrick, what I really want to think about from a strategic standpoint with this is closing out the end of this fiscal year on an operational cost of the system, having a really good handle on what it's going to cost, and bringing that 2014-2015 budget to you once we close out all the books. But really roll up our sleeves, Justin and our consultants and Bob and I and Patrick, and really, based on the information we have and what we can foresee in the future, a cost associated with running this in 2015-2016. So if we start it back up in mid-July, as Bob has indicated, and we start the tracer study, those are things that are going to be a cost for next fiscal year. And so I think that that could work to our advantage because we can essentially determine a closeout cost, if you will, for shutting this thing down and having some real figures for you by the end of this fiscal year, but also transferring those figures into next year's calculations because we will be starting it up and shutting it down. And making sure that the board and the community has a good feel for what it's going to cost us to operate the system. I always want to make sure that that staff and I emphasize this to them that we're being the best stewards that we can of the community's resources and monies. And I always want to keep a close handle on that. So I think that we could get a good handle on what it's cost us to run as far as chemicals, electrical shutdown, any future mitigation measures we anticipate, any support relating to the EIR, anything like that. We can put a good sound budget together for you for next year and have a real cost associated with what it's going to cost to run it for fiscal year 2015-2016, which starts July 1st. That's our fiscal year, and we're working on the budget process now. And I got to tell you, Patrick, and he's up next, but he's done a really good job in, I think, capturing all the costs associated with this project so far. But we have to continuously communicate to Patrick. If Justin goes out and buys a DO meter and a pH meter and all these other things, and some of that information is included in the emails that I sent you, And knowing what the operational cost is, we have to pass that on to Patrick. Patrick's not going to know that just by processing the AP. We have to communicate that to Patrick on an ongoing basis so he can capture that on the in the EWS cost. So we have it dialed in pretty much to the penny now. And so that's an important aspect of it. Maybe if it's okay, Madam President, with you to have maybe Patrick comment on
yes.
his concerns, really, or his thoughts on...
Well, I thought I heard you yeah. just say we just pass it on to Patrick and he pays it.
Madam President, members of the board, excuse me. What you've seen is a very preliminary budget. Every day it changes, so I'm not going to talk about any specific numbers. We are coming up for the next fiscal year with two budgets for the AWTP. One is for the months when it's operating, and one is for the months when it's not operating. Because even when it's not operating, there are costs of maintaining the system. So we're going to look at we're going to propose that you adopt two budgets for next year. As far as the current year costs are concerned, they were included in the existing budget as part of the implementation of the system. So they're going to be coming not out of the revenues that the system's generating, which is none now because we haven't charged yet for the system, but rather from the initial loan. The offer of CDM Smith to operate the plant for a few weeks, even 3 weeks, it's about $39,000 a month to do that. So that's a fairly substantial offer, but it's not going to impact our operating budget either way. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for our budget manager?
No.
Okay.
I have some comments, though.
Pardon?
Did you have a public comment?
We want to hear from Justin first.
Okay, Justin.
Yes, I'd like to call Justin next.
Okay. Madam President, members of the board, so right now we're running the plant. We're doing really well with maintaining it and keeping track of everything. There's still some operational issues that CDM needs to work out on their end, and it's really hard for us to keep up with all the sampling and everything that goes on at the plant while they're starting it, shutting it down, starting it, shutting it down. There's still construction aspects that really got to get fine-tuned. There's a lot of requirements in the permit, and there's a lot of requirements that we have to meet, and we, you know, it would really help operationally to be able to give us some time, give CDM Smith some time where they can work, where we can get all of those worked out, basically. And it's a huge process because I got to go through line by line, find everything, and then I got to communicate with CDM Smith, and they got to communicate with their subcontractors. And it's not just like it can just be done, especially when the plant's running. It's not like a guy can come in, make these changes to the programming and the software running the whole system. So that's kind of an aspect that would really help to have us down for a period of time so that we can work those things out. It'll also help us gain some footing with the regulatory agencies, because right now CDM Smith is doing everything, but when we can come back and say, hey, everything's here, here's where it all is, we got it all dialed in, you know, that's going to be a huge part. We also want to make sure the upcoming tracer test, I know it just is, okay, we got a tracer test coming up. Well, that tracer test, the plant has to run for 24/7, and then the wells have to run for 24/7 to trace that water in the worst case scenario. We don't want to take it lightly because it is a big undertaking logistically to make sure that you have everything you need in place so that you can accomplish that. And it would really help to have a period of time where we're not kind of learning this whole new large thing, keeping track of all the regulatory stuff on three permits, really, because there's the advanced water treatment plant, there's the brine pond, and then there's the creek discharge permit, low threat. So we got to keep track of all those, and then we got to plan for this huge study coming up. So we, you know, it'd be really nice, I mean, for myself to just get a small window where we kind of catch our breath and get ready to really dial this in.
Thank you very much. And you're feeling comfortable then with that window would be if we went till the end of April?
Yeah.
And give you then back there on mid-July?
Yeah.
All right. That's very important that we need to know that. Okay. All right. We have no more reports. I want to move to public comment. But first, a comment from Director Thompson.
Okay, I just have one question, and that's related to the tracer test. When we do conduct the next tracer test, we will still be operating under the same conditions as we did previously, where we would have to rely solely upon Santa Rosa? Or no, we can operate out of both the...
No, I believe we would be able to use the San Simeon Aquifer, but we'd only be able to use one well at a time, I believe. So we'd be restricted to one well at a time during that tracer test. So it would probably be a 50-50 split would be the goal, or most of the water would be coming from San Simeon, depending on our usage.
So one production well at a time?
Yeah, in San Simeon, yeah.
Okay. Any other questions for Justin specifically, Director Rice?
This is actually maybe for Bob, maybe for Justin. I'm not exactly sure who would be able to answer. Talking about the tracer test running 24/7, we've been running 8 hours a day essentially right now, so and only 5 days a week. So I'm running 24/7 for 2 months. How often, I mean, when would that actually be the operating parameters? Is that what the operating parameters would be during this summer because of the severe drought? Or are we going to be doing 24/7? Do we have the staffing for 24/7? I mean, there's a lot of, in the operations manual, there's a lot of numbers here and there about pressures and gallons per minute and all kinds of things like that, and calculating how much water is actually, you know, treated and becoming product water and waste and all of that. But I'm just curious as to, because if we're only going to run it for 8 hours a day, even 7 days a week, that seems like that's a different result in a tracer test, if that's going to be more likely what we're going to be using, how we're going to be using it. It seems, from reading the operations manual, it seems like.
Well, that's a very good question, and the staffing is one big question that Jerry and Justin and I still have to wrestle through for that tracer study, because it would require the 24/7 operation of the new facility, plus pulling the water off with either well SS1 or SS2 on a continuous basis, and where are we going to put water if we can, I have ideas, but we still need that pause, and having that 2 month break roughly would be very helpful to help strategize that further. And the staffing is going to be a key issue.
General Manager Gruber.
Madam President, and we're also meeting with the Regional Water Quality Control Board in person next week. Justin and Bob and I are going to go down. And the emphasis of the meeting originally was to talk about the brine pond, and we're still going to do that and to share with them some of the things that we've done to resolve some of the issues that they're concerned about. But also this conversation we need to have. We need to talk to them about the tracer study, and would they be receptive to allowing the automation that we've installed there to pick up that additional manning coverage requirements, you know, because it is a very sophisticated system. And ultimately, that should be our goal, to not to have somebody physically on site, although we will want them for a specific period of time, and not to just put this thing on autopilot, but to have a conversation with the Regional Water Quality Control Board to see if they'd be receptive to, while the tracer study is going on, would they allow for that automation period of time to be utilized. Now, if they absolutely say, you know, no, you haven't ran this thing 6 months yet, then we have to, as part of the budgetary process and things like that, accommodate those needs by staffing it 24 hours a day, whether it's two 12-hour shifts with a T3 or something like that. But we'll come up with a solution, but it also needs to be part of the budgetary process also. There needs to be real numbers in there so you understand the cost associated with running that facility and making sure that we do the tracer study that's in accordance with the requirements of the Regional Water Quality Control Board. So.
And do we have a cost breakout for the two different settings? I know right now the Water Quality Control Board requires that we have, if we're running it, that we have a person there 24 hours a day or 10 hours a day. And we're asking then maybe for the first 6 months. But then are we going to do a cost breakout that would show after that period if it's automated and running more, you know, monitored electronically, the difference in cost? Are we doing both?
Yes. And Patrick, as he indicated earlier when he spoke, is a cost that when it is running and when it's not running. But when it is running, if you can extract the cost of CDM, for an example, their operational cost, which is pretty high, but also if we were able to use our automation feature to extract the cost of personnel associated with that. And that's a real cost that you can extract that's fairly easy to do. So the answer to that is yes.
Okay, thank you. We, I believe, are ready for public comment. Ed Talkstein? Is Ed here? Ed left? Okay. Okay, then next, Elizabeth Bettenhausen. Oh, okay, we'll just put her on hold. How awkward. No, excuse me. Karen Dean.
I just wanted to point out something that was in a lot of the documentation for
this
project.
Do you have your mic on? Is it a green light on?
Yes.
Maybe tweak it up a bit. Ah, it sounds like it's off.
I'm technologically challenged here.
Okay, there we go.
It sounds like you're seriously considering turning this machine off for a couple of months. So what I wanted to say probably as a moot point, but I had noticed in the paperwork that was passed out at the C4H2O meeting in September and also in the operation manual that this project running for 2 6-month dry seasons in a row, the pond would become full even with the evaporators going, and then it would need to rest for a period of time. Mari brought this up at the Regional Quality Control Board meeting. So I was concerned that if you were considering leaving this running through the end of the dry season, that we might have difficulty using it during the next dry season if it hadn't evaporated enough, and that was just all I wanted to point out.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Mary Webb?
Interesting discussion.
Monique?
I would really appreciate having something in writing that shows, obviously cost is huge, and there's nothing right in writing now about the cost of the operation, the cost of starting it up, the cost of shutting it down. What are the advantages of keeping it going? What are the advantages of shutting it down? I mean, that this should be on something, a document that everybody can look at and decide, like, what's the way to go. If you're going to keep it running till April 30th with CDM Smith, I hope you will have CDM at least do one test startup and one test shutdown, so somebody does actually see that process of happening on and off. And but we need to know what the costs of that are. The wells are full, so when the plant is running, where's the water going? the agencies have wrote in, written in now on the notice of preparation for the EIR, and have described ongoing harm that the project is causing. The brine pond, birds are dead, fish are dead, horse is dead. So operating even the tracer test 24/7 with the mechanical evaporators operating in the summer may not fly. I don't know if you're going to be able to do that, or if you're going to be able to do the tracer test without operating the mechanical evaporators in the summer. We need to show, people need to realize that once you shut it down, it takes 2 months for the water to get back into the water system. So if you shut it down in July, you're not going to see that water until October, which is the rainy season again of 2015, which means we never will have gotten any drinking water out of this project at all. Or then the alternative of that is if we are getting drinking water out of the project, if you do this starting, stopping process while we're drinking out of San Simeon Creek, I'm worried about the quality of the water, turbidity, chemicals that could actually be ending up in the injection wells, and who's actually monitoring for that. And since it hasn't actually passed a tracer test, people could start getting sick from the water that's being injected because we really haven't gone through a full starting, stopping process. So if you are going to do that, we probably shouldn't be drinking out of San Simeon Creek. Are you going to lift the water emergency if you stop it, which means then that people are going to start watering their yards again, which means we're going to use 50% more water because that's all the water that we saved is outdoor irrigation was 50% of our water. If you can stop it and still have people not water outdoors, you know, maybe we can do what Jim suggested, I think, 2 years ago, is to help pay for water, non-potable water tank trucks to go around and spray people's yards this summer. That would help with the fire issue. And for people who have issues with not being able to water their yards, if what we can help fund them watering their yards, I think would be cheaper than paying even the electrical on the machines. So shut it down, but learn how to start it and stop it before you do. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you very much, Madam President. If I bribe you, will you give me a copy of that operating budget? I think the first time I asked for it was in August of 2014. I'd very much welcome that being made available to the public since we do pay our rates. I asked Mr. Gruber on Friday, and certainly there's been no time to respond to this, but I asked him whether he was still saying that it would be approximately April 10th that the plant would shut down. And then he said the contractor would prepare a report on, quote, how the operations went and anything we need to improve, end of quotation. And I hope that that will be germane to your decision about doing what with the plant. I'm not really quite sure what you're talking about here, but I think I heard you say that this is not long-term policy about operating the plant. This is just a little short-term policy, because I certainly complimented several meetings ago Director Beringer on asking for a policy on this question. And it needs much more discussion and deliberation than you could possibly give it today, given your heavy schedules and given the lack of printed material, except for some emails you got, which the public didn't get. I want definitely to thank the staff. Yeah. Sir? I'm when Elizabeth is speechless, that says something. Friends, 350 pages is only the written version of reality, and I've read it. thank you, Justin, and the whole staff. Thank you. The operating costs, I'd love to see that budget, as I've said. I was interested, though, to hear the general manager say that we have now task order 6 that we haven't heard from. The last budget you looked at, there were only 5 task orders, but now there's task order 6. And I'd like to know what all is entailed there, because it seems to sound like we are having additional costs, not only for Task Order 6 with CDM Smith, but also for non-CDM Smith-related additional costs. And friends, we do not have a very reliable numbers list for this project. And I beg you, as I frequently do, I have to confess, Please exercise your fiscal responsibility on this project. The tracer, if you go and look, has to be run in the dry season. It cannot be run yet, so it has to be run by the regulation in the dry season. And if you run it 24/7, I don't know. You know what? I think this sort of, isn't that sort of a cute elephant seal picture that I sent with my email to Mr. Gruber? I think they're damn cute animals. But on the other hand, I would also say that maybe if you have to run the tracer test for 2 months at 24/7, 7 days a week, that you look at what you're doing with your EIR in relationship to that, because the CEQA requirements might have direct bearing upon that as well. Friends, you work hard. Work harder.
Thank you. Laura Schwartz? Oh, did you want, would you like me to read it? I can do that if you'd like. Okay. This is written comment for public comment from Laura Schwartz. Since we are running the plant until the end of the month anyway, please run a test on our fire hydrants now. It hasn't been done in years to my knowledge. Thank you. Laura, that's right. Okay, thank you. Yes.
Because Fire Chief Miller was on our Forest Committee board, we talk about all this.
You have to come up. Now you'll have to come up. Okay. Come on up. Okay. Thank you.
Is this on?
Yeah.
Okay. Since Chief Miller was on our board of directors with the Forest Committee, we have different kind of discussions of things that come up about things. And I learned from him that our fire hydrants haven't been tested in years. And the thing is, we have all this fire risk, but we don't know if our fire hydrants even work. So this might be a time, while we have the water running out to sea, that we use it to test our fire hydrants to make sure they're going to work if we have a fire. We could collect the water from the fire hydrant and use it on our trees before they die, which would help us in a lot of different ways.
Thank you. Mike Lyons.
Thank you very much for your attention to the budget and the cost of the EWS going on. I appreciate the fact that you're minding our money. And I really do appreciate the idea that we should know how to turn the equipment on and off. I had the privilege of seeing the equipment up close and personal this week, and I was very impressed with it. It's a marvelous machine. But it's a very complicated machine in terms of chemicals, the physical plant itself, electricity, energy use, the pumps, security, and many other items. So I suggest that if you do turn off this equipment, even though it may cost more money, I do strongly suggest that you have the experts who built it there in place. I don't cast any aspersions against any of the witnesses today or any of the experts that we have on hand. But I do think it would be a wise idea to keep somebody there who knows the system historically and can root out any particular problems that might arise. The other thing I have to say is that I do feel that there is a political cost that could be a problem for restarting the system once it's shut down. We've heard today some negative words about the evaporation pond and the fans, and you could go on and on about the subjects that have been talked about over the last several meetings. I wonder that if the negativity that comes about may prevent us from starting our own plant again. My overarching concern is that now that our ratepayers and our citizens have paid for this project and it is working, that we may be prevented from starting it again, or we may have to go through so many time-consuming and political and costly hoops to get it started again that we may well have been wise to keep it running. Thank you.
Thank you. Are we need a motion at this time?
I would move that we continue operation of the emergency water supply plant and implementation of emergency water supply surcharges through the end of April, with the restart date to be determined at a future meeting by the board when we have more information. I think we should run it. The motion is I think we should run it and apply the surcharges through the end of April.
Is there a second? Hearing no second?
Let me discuss for a second here. I would like to have some kind of a date when you're going to restart, or a formula for when you're going to restart. Whether it's July 1 or August 1, or when the well field reaches a certain level.
May I speak to why I say the no start date?
Maybe if your motion didn't include. Maybe if your motion just said we'd continue it through April 30th and stop there, and then we could talk about
that.
The second part.
I'm good with that. I don't have an objection to changing it to that, because the reason I spoke only to the extending the shutdown date is what I was hearing from both operations, from the general manager and from Bob, was that there are further meetings that need to happen regarding what's going on both with staffing and what the regional board is going to be requiring of us, and even what dates the start date would be appropriate, if that's what that those things are still being worked out.
Yeah.
Which is why I only wanted to speak to the stop date, but we could and then have a separate discussion on the restart is fine with me.
Yeah, maybe I could weigh in on that a little bit in that I'm sorry, President.
No, go ahead.
Just a couple thoughts. I think the public should know that when we run this plant, we're going to charge them. I mean, we haven't been so far, but they will be charged. And I think that we know we have a tracer study that's going to happen. So if we amended it ever so slightly and said on or about mid-July to commence the tracer study, that can be changed at a future meeting, the date. But to not have the community understand that we're going to run this for 2 months in the summer, I think would be we're missing an opportunity to do that.
May I suggest that
Sure.
we have two separate motions, and then we can have the discussion about the restart up? Because I do think we do need to have that at least somewhere in the vicinity of what's going on.
I agree with you, Director Rice, and let me go on just a little bit more. I don't think this should be a short term. I think we should have some kind of trigger. Not for this year, maybe, but my suggestion and the reason I wanted to have this discussion is we never had an opportunity to talk about it, and the public never got a chance to think of it. But my thoughts always were that for this year and probably the next two out, until we're getting a reliable rainfall totals, that we could run this for a minimum amount of 2 months every year. For about 3 years, and then after that, we make a decision on what to do. There's a lot of benefits to it, exercising it. We're going to get, in that two-month period, we're going to get 46 acre-feet a month. That's more than we're using. So to run this only for a couple of months each year is going to have a financial impact, too, because the plan, when we built the plan, we said we're going to run it for 6 months every year. The brine pond is designed for 6 months of use every year. If we practice using it only 2 months, maybe the brine pond doesn't have to run as much and all this other kind of stuff. But to not have a plan on running it for each of the next 3 years for 2 months, that's what I would suggest, and that's why I wanted to have that conversation. I don't know what your other thoughts are. And if you want to make it two different things, I'm not opposed to that. We could have your motion that we run it until the end of the month in the purpose of training for shutdown. I would second that motion, but then I also would move to start a date.
Okay. We didn't have a second, though. We're just back into a discussion right now. It seemed to me, anyway, in listening to staff and what was presented here today, that right now we are, again, because we are moving all the time in new territory for the moment, we have no rearview mirror on this yet, that the request, as far as I understood from staff, was that we go ahead and accept CDM Smith's offer to keep it running till the end of April, get some real key training down, get it videoed, And I would like AGP, I think, to do the videotaping. But I think those things are critical on the shutdown and the startup. But my understanding was, too, nevertheless, we have that tracer study to do, and that you were going to look into getting an okay from the regulatory agency to have that start in mid-July. So for me, those two dates just on our first time out on a shutdown and a startup seem to be based on current need. And I think we do want to set a policy very soon on how long we want to run it, maybe over the next 3 years, and reevaluate again after that. That's my thinking on it. Would you like to amend your motion? No?
I could move. I'll move that we continue. We shut down the plant with the assistance of CDM Smith prior to the end of this month, and plan a restart on or about July 25th to begin the tracer study as needed.
I'll second that.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. Is there any further discussion?
Yes.
Vice President Cliff.
Now, does this include charging from April 10th to April 30th?
I kind of like the idea, frankly. I think we're running in the red, and you know, there's extra costs. I mean, it's a good exercise for our customers. They'll now start seeing the $1.50 extra fee.
But your motion didn't include the implementation of the emergency water surcharge.
No. Oh, is that in here?
Yeah.
Okay.
My motion did.
Do you want to amend that?
I would amend that and move that the surcharge commence effective today.
Well,
can we do
President,
that?
We can read, Justin, I'm getting a nod from him. We can read tomorrow and then implement. You
sure.
Know, so, yeah, it's not that a problem.
So you get a baseline.
Yeah. And then
okay, would you state your motion then one more time, please?
I move that we continue with the assistance of CDM Smith shutting down the plant no later than the end of April. Schedule the restart of the plant on or about February 15th,
July
15th, for 2 months, to accommodate the tracer study, and it doesn't say that there. And add the surcharge beginning at the next meter read till the plant, and apply water supply surcharges effective Wednesday, April 8th.
The meter read is based on Justin's getting a baseline this week. Is that what you mean?
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Is there a second on that?
Well, I want to make sure we're clear. Now, okay. Are you including the surcharges when you started up?
Yes. And when during the tracer study, the community should anticipate that surcharges will apply.
Okay. Do we still have the second? We have the second. Any further discussion? Yes. Director Rice?
Thank you, President Robinette. Couple of things. I didn't hear anything in the discussion about how this is affecting our current water supply or the potential effect on our water supply during the summertime when we're running it. I think there's an important distinction to be made between the reason why we weren't charging folks up to this point was that this is part of the construction still, and it would seem to me that this remaining 3 weeks, even though we do need the money, we had committed already to allowing that during this time until it was shut down, people wouldn't be charged for it. I have a little bit of a problem in mid-flow without folks knowing ahead of time. Some of us have to budget carefully, and that extra money will make a difference, even though it's only for part of a month. It could make a big difference for some folks, and they have no warning that it's going to start tomorrow except for right now. So I don't support that part of it. I do think we should charge the emergency surcharges when we turn it back on, but I think to continue with under the rationale why we were not charging people up to this point, which was that it's continued part of the construction process and completing the whole construction of the project, what this testing phase, I think is contradictory. Not necessarily in a way that I couldn't somehow wrap my mind around, but I don't like that there's no warning on this, but when the bills come, people will be surprised, to say the least.
As part of the discussion, we have a first and a second. If the second secondee agrees, what we could do is do a measurement, put on people's bill the surcharge they would have been charged had we charge them.
That sounds like more work.
It's a lot of work, maybe, but maybe that's impossible. But the idea is to let the people know that in July and August, when we start the project, this is about how much it's going to cost you in surcharges for those months.
I
am sensitive to the fact that starting right away, without any notice, without any public person coming up, and it might be a little onerous to start charging on the 8th.
General Secondary, Manager.
Yeah. So this is good because Patrick has a comment about the software, and this is a good conversation. Okay. So, Patrick, you want to comment on the software?
I just wanted to bring your attention. We had to have custom software written to be able to do this. We haven't tested it yet, and it would be a good opportunity for us to do a test. It's only 3 weeks' worth of usage. We could even delay it a little bit. We could say we're not going to start charging until the 20th or something, but it would be good for us to be able to actually test this software to work the kinks out of it and make sure it works. As far as showing people what they would have used, that would require additional programming. It'd be very expensive.
I think one of the reasons in our earlier discussion, we wanted to go through the pickling process and the unpickling process of the plant as a test. He's right. You know, he'd like to test his software. That's going to cost some people some money, but it'll be only on a 20-day period. So in fact, less than 20 days, in the 20-day period, they'll get charged. I don't know. I'm open for more discussion.
What?
I'm open for more discussion. I have a first, and I made a motion that we charge them. If Director Thompson is still comfortable with that, we have a motion and a second on the table, and we can discuss that.
Well, given the finance person's desire to actually have some test period, I'd certainly be willing to delay the surcharges to the extent possible, and just go with that. So.
Okay, would you accept an amendment where we say that we do, so that people have a little bit of advance notice, that we take the reading on the 20th? What we're saying then is we only have 2 weeks' worth of impact on somebody. You still get to test your software. People are going to use a small amount of water during that two-week period. They have a week or more to be notified of the read on the 20th, and it kind of accomplishes everything. And if the second...
If
Director Thompson agrees to that?
If that works, I'd accept that.
Okay.
So I hate to say this.
Does that work for staff to do a read on 20th? Okay. So it's a minor impact on the customer. The customer gets exercised. The software gets exercised and elsewhere. Okay.
My question is this: if we're going to do this on the 20th, and just for a minor charge of 10 days, then is what we're looking at, and it helps in the budget manager, and budget manager, I need to ask you this. If we do this for 10 days as another kind of thing that's brand new software, trial run, see if it works as you expect it to work, then my question is, can we do all that and get all those figures, get the data, let you assess if your software is working the way it wants, and not charge? I mean, not actually make the charge, but you have then some real-life data running.
That wouldn't help us any. Because,
okay, I just needed to find out.
We got to go through the whole process, make sure the bills print correctly, make sure the things are going in the right columns, that sort of thing.
Okay. Yeah. So then we're wanting not to have a full 2 weeks, but a 10 days, and it would be our first time with the actual charge.
That's my motion.
And that's the second. Any further discussion? Director Rice?
Okay, so on the turning it back on, is your motion just that we turn it back on only for the tracer study, or that we have, and that would be the purpose for turning it back on would be for the tracer study, and not necessarily because we do need, I mean, obviously we will get water because of the drought to help address the drought.
Correct. I think this is the 2 month tracer study is completing the installation, so to speak. It's completing the startup. It's completing.
I just want to know what I will be voting
that 2 months
for.
Now,
voting for it.
We'll never know in July and August if it turns out we have to make a decision to extend. That possibility of extending might work. And one of the reasons, and this is part of the discussion, one of the reasons we might want to put a third month on it this particular year is that after having 6 months of operation, you can then go to an automated way of testing. And so if we get all 3 of those months out, this 3 months and another 3 months, then when we start it again another year out, we'll be able to do it much cheaper. So that's one thought.
Clarification, aren't we trying to find out, though? I mean, we're voting on this, but then you're still checking to see if it's okay if you do your tracer study in mid-July, correct? That's one thing. And then the other thing is what you were talking about, though.
Yeah, I think the regulatory agencies, Mr. Gruber, you might talk to that. After six, they require 6 months of intensive
on-site
monitoring. So after that, if we're successful and we know we can run the plant, we operate under a different operating guideline. So if running it for 2 months just for the tracer study, and if we're still in a drought and we need the water, to continue it a third month before we pickle it or before we decommission it again temporarily might make sense.
Because we actually need the water.
And we actually need the water, right. But I'm saying at least 2 months for the tracer test. That's
okay.
The clarification of the motion.
So what we still have in front of us, though, is very simply that we are going to turn this off on the 30th. We're going to implement charges starting on the 20th, and we're going to come back in mid-July at least a minimum of 2 months for the tracer study.
Correct. That's the clarification of the motion.
And charges will apply.
And charges will apply
toward that 10 days in April and then during the tracer study.
Yes.
And Director Rice, did you have for the comment, but have you been waiting, Vice President Cliff, or is your green buttons just on?
Oh, excuse me.
That's okay. Yes, Director Rice.
Okay, so minimum of 2 months. I would be much more comfortable supporting the motion. Thank you for restating the things that are included in it. If it didn't say a minimum of 2 months, if it said there was some trigger that said that we were going to relook at it, that we're going to do the tracer test, and then we need to determine what we're going to do after that. I mean, I don't want to just say we're going to just necessarily then kind of, we can just kind of decide randomly. Right. I mean, this is kind of why I wanted to have this shutdown and the startup as separate, because it gets complicated.
I understand. And also, by that time, I'm convinced that we will come up with some kind of a trigger to run it in 2016. Might be well levels, it might be something else, and we'll have another winter to go by. So we should have a long-term trigger as why, when we turn it on, for how long, but that's not part of this discussion. It's just this year what we're going to do,
If I might just suggest as a friendly amendment that you are free to completely not second or whatever, but to have the, instead of having the restart for the tracer test, that it be brought back to the board in June when we know more what the regional board is going to allow and what they are expecting from us in terms of the tracer test, that it comes back on the June agenda for the board to look with the additional data, actual something in writing, after they've had a chance to take a breath, like Justin was saying, so that they can bring us a fuller report of what we're looking at, because they've had some time when they're not trying to run. I mean, I don't know if anybody else looked at that manual, but it's that thing is complicated.
I will accept a an adjustment to the motion that would say the original motion, whatever it was, or as may be changed in the June meeting, because this group of people need to make a plan on a date certain when they start. We have to have people schedule and flight. I don't want to drop the mid-July start date, but I will say that the start date can be perfected in the June meeting.
Well, there's nothing to preclude. Let's not make it too complicated. More complicated than it is. There's nothing to preclude coming back in June saying we need to adjust the date.
Right.
And so let's
based
just go
on
with
what
the
agencies say.
Right.
I mean, this is what we think, and if it is accepted that we go to mid-July and turn it on, but if they say no, something, we have to change it.
Okay.
So
I'm comfortable as long as the general manager is comfortable with that understanding that if it needs to be changed from the mid-July date, or it looks like we may need to run it more than the 2 months, that we actually hear that as the board in June, that's what's going on.
If we know.
Yeah, in parallel to all this, staff is going to be, working on all the things that
right.
The board has discussed. So it's not like we're going to be sitting idly till the end of June. Yeah, we're going to be working on this every day and making sure that you were in communication with Regional Water Quality Control Board, CDM Smith,
EIR,
all those things. So it's a, it just by the nature of the project and the complexity, it consumes a good part of our day every day. But that's just part of what we have to do. So not a problem.
Monique, would you like to read this back and see where we finally are? I imagine Justin's thrilled to be here.
Okay. Director Berenger moved to shut down the plant with the assistance of CDM Smith by the end of April and schedule startup by July 15th for 2 months to accommodate the tracer study and add surcharges to commence effective April 20th and apply surcharges during the July through September operation period.
Oh, I wish I had said that. That's great.
So you're good. And the second is good.
July to September operation period.
For 2 months, July to. Did you say
mid-July
to mid-July for 2 months?
Mid-September.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. Mid-September. All right. Any further discussion?
I can't count.
No. Okay. I'd like a roll call, please.
Director Berenger?
Aye.
Director Thompson?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Vice President Cliff?
Aye.
President Robinette?
Aye. Motion passes 5-0. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you so much for the information. I'm looking forward to seeing more once you guys have a chance to take a deep breath. You guys have been working really hard, and I know with the EIR and everything, it's really been a lot of work, and I really appreciate it. As an individual Cambrian, I totally appreciate it.
I know we all appreciate the whole team. You've done a great job. We're still going forward. We appreciate everything you do. Yes, sir?
I saw yesterday where another community in California has run out of water, and I can't even pronounce the name of the community, but it's up north someplace. And I think this really speaks to the fact that that we have been proactive in making sure we don't run out of water. This year is going to be worse than last year. And so I'm really pleased that we're ahead of the curve on this.
It's on the agenda.
If you could show me where, because we would only comment on the agenda items at a special meeting. This is according to legal counsel.
Yeah.